something that was previously judged by counsel to be appropriate to negotiate. What we did in this contract was extend that benefit to the chief in relation to discretionarily granting leave to a commanding officer if the chief concluded that that commanding officer's circumstance warranted it.
So that's not by right. It's at the discretion of the chief.
Correct.
And we think that that's the case even though the commanding officers wouldn't necessarily be out interfacing with the public?
I would posit that in many instances, the commanding officer's judgment is more critical because they're calling strategic and operationally strategic decisions on the scene. And so the chief's confidence that that commanding officer's judgment is not clouded by their grieving process, I would posit, is equally important or more important, frankly. Well, I'm not going to say more important, but certainly equally important.
So, Yvonne, does this set a precedent that perhaps employees who are taking 911 calls should be afforded the same level of benefit?
I don't believe that it necessarily I don't believe necessarily that it sets a precedent. I think that if we're at the table and BOEC employees union put forth some type of a proposal, we would look at it on this merit as it relates to the work and the work unit and what we think would be appropriate.
I think we should keep that in mind for the next time. And certainly we hope this is a benefit that is seldom, if ever, used.
Definitely.
So thank you very much. Yes. The other question I had, which is possibly going to be more often used, is what is meant by a pregnancy-related disability?
Commissioner, if you can direct me to where you're referring.
In the contract. Let's see. I think it's towards the end. I just wondered what the...
Commissioner, Article 13, family leave, I think you're referring to the last paragraph. This is Steve Herron again, for the record.
I think you're referring to the last paragraph.
That was existing language in the expiring contract we didn't address. And the language that's bold underline three paragraphs above that is the language in that article that we were bargaining. To be perfectly frank, neither party raised that issue, raised anything in that paragraph for discussion. And so in this moment, I'm not prepared to talk about what that article or that provision
Is your question, what is a pregnancy-related disability?
I'm just wondering whether pregnancy itself is considered a disability or whether there are particular...
There are particular complications that may occur during pregnancy that would be a pregnant-related disability. But a pregnancy itself under the ADA is not considered a disability.
Thank you. That's a good clarification. Certainly a challenge, but not...
Definitely a challenge.
Right, unless there's additional council discussion. Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right. Thank you for your presentation. Chief, anything you want to say? Okay. Can you please call the vote?
Fritz?
Well, thank you to Yvonne and Steve and the HR team and to Commander Benson for your good work on this agreement. It obviously is a package that comes before us as a package, and I appreciate all the good work that's gone into it and the good work that you all do day in, day out. Aye.
Fish.
This has been a long and challenging season of labor agreements, and this is the last one with the exception of the PDC agreement. So congratulations to Yvonne and Steve for bringing this home and for bringing the council along in this process, because I know how challenging that can be. And Commander, to you and PPCOA, we value the partnership greatly. And thank you for the kind words that you had earlier today. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank our bargaining team led by Yvonne and Steve, and thank the Portland Police Commanding Officers Association, PPCOA, for reaching this agreement. I think it's a good agreement. I accept what you say about drug testing being somewhat intrusive into your civil liberties. But I also appreciate that you recognize sort of the bigger picture and how we restore and regain trust with our citizenry, and we need to do this. And so I want to just thank everybody for doing this, and please to vote aye.
Leonard?
Well, I would like to repeat some of what I said when the PPA contract was in front of us. This is truly the second of two very historic agreements at the Police Bureau, the importance of which should not be underestimated or underappreciated by the community. Dave, you not only obviously have the confidence of the people you represent because they elect you, but it's clear you also have the confidence of the administration because of the position you hold in the Bureau as well. And I think that's a real testament to your professionalism, something that I've really appreciated and was reflected in your opening remarks about the current nationwide struggle with collective bargaining rights for public employees. And you certainly said what I believe and felt. And you live those words every day as well. And in my many dealings with you, I've never been more impressed with the union leader in the city than I have with you. This reflects that, and your ongoing work is a testament to that. The Police Bureau, in my view, has undergone some of the most remarkable positive changes in the last year that I have ever witnessed. And it's a real testament, obviously, to the leadership of the Bureau, but also to the what I actually believe is the desire of street cops to be their best. And as I said many times, not always in a supportive fashion, the leadership of the Bureau sets the standard, and the troops in the field do what it is they see reflected in their leadership on a day-to-day basis. In the past, that always hasn't been, in my view, the highest standard. I will tell you, I've never seen a higher standard in the Police Bureau leadership than I'm witnessing these days, and it's truly heartening to see, and it plays itself out in a number of ways, important examples such as this, for an example, where we sit down and actually negotiate without having to go to a third-party arbitrator drug testing. So having been on the other side of the table, I understand the delicacy of that issue, and my hat's off to Steve, Yvonne, Dave, Chief Reese, and the whole team for doing what I think is just really a remarkable job. Aye.
Thank you. Adams.
Well, I want to second the well-deserved and hard-earned accolades that you've heard in the vote comments from my colleagues to just underscore, Commander, your great work as a leader of the union, and also your great work in the Bureau. To our team at Bureau of Human Resources, it was a daunting task when we talked about all these agreements coming up in 1 year, and that the city sought this for like 10 years to have them all come up in 1 year based on a premise that has now sort of disappeared, but we got what we asked for, and I honestly didn't know if we would get through this in one piece. And so I want to thank you, Yvonne, and your entire team for the great work that you've done. And I have one more to go with PDC, but I appreciate your wise advice that you've given us on PDC. And I also want to underscore the great contribution to coming to agreement with PPA and PPCOA of Chief Mike Reese and his team. I really appreciate all the work as well in problem solving and communication as part of this process. So I'm very, very pleased to vote aye.
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 Thank you.
The consent agenda?
Oh, yes, because we didn't have enough people because some people were late. Okay.
Actually, Mayor, in solidarity with the Senate Democrats in Wisconsin, Commissioner Leonard and I were in a remote location.
All right, Pats. Pats, we now know. Pats hiding behind the pillar
saw
over there.
On the agenda, Mayor, and we, in solidarity, we.
Mm-hmm. What do you have against eco-roofs? Okay. We'll now take a vote on the consent agenda. Hearing nothing polled. Carla.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. That gets us to the regular agenda. Can you please read item 213 and S215 together?
213, authorize a memorandum of understanding between the city and Portland Public Schools to review, prioritize, and implement transportation safety improvements concerning district schools. S215, improve land use regulations related to schools as part of the schools and parks conditional use code refinement package.
So this moves forward the tentative decision by council to a final decision by council. The MOU has been approved and concurrence has been achieved with the Portland Public School District. I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Well, isn't this vote the first one to approve the MOU?
This is the first one to approve the MOU based on our earlier discussion and direction and agreement. Yes. The S215 is actually a second reading.
Mayor, I was not present for the first reading of this last week because I was in Salem testifying in support of a part of the city's housing agenda. But I do want to say that I was fully briefed on this, and had I been here, I would have enthusiastically supported the motion that you made, which, as I understand it, blended very skillfully the staff recommendation with the Safe Routes to School work that you have been leading, and I think struck the right balance. With this work and combined with what we've done on the on ball fields and the new ground rules for replacing surfaces and putting an adjacent field in, I think we have struck the right balance between citizen involvement in important land use matters and also the school districts having the flexibility to manage curriculum and their good work. So while I wasn't here, I would have enthusiastically supported the motion, and I thank you.
All right, unless there's additional council discussion or anyone wishes to testify on item number 213.
No one signed up.
Please call the vote first on 213 and then on S215 second reading.
Fritz?
I understand and appreciate the mayor's reasoning behind this proposal. As indicated in last week's conversation, $5 million, which is contemplated, is coming from the bond measure should it pass, will be diverted to this need. And as indicated last week, in the discussion of the code refinement project, there are tens of millions of dollars needed to make the necessary improvements around schools. I do like how this will utilize the Safe Routes to Schools program that's already in place and will help to evaluate needs for all schools with existing tools like the engineering strategy reports and the continuous service plans. The MOU contemplates $5,000 devoted to each school for their respective studies, which does not seem nearly enough, and I'm not sure where the funding is going to come, the rest of the funding will come from for those studies. I like the development of a master project list as contemplated in the memorandum and the prioritization of transportation, traffic safety issues, and projects, but I'm concerned that the list is intended to meet conditional use criteria, which we currently have, will in fact not be appropriate given that many of these projects will remain unfunded and we will have no way of prioritizing that should a change in use occur. It's also contemplated that schools requiring conditional use review are the ones that will be given top priority, whether or not they are actually the schools with the greatest need for facility improvements. I would like to see a priority system that improves, that provides for the need first. And I don't agree with many of the statements made in the resolution. Excuse me. For those reasons, I regretfully vote no.
Fish.
Mayor, we're taking, this is 213 first?
Correct, the resolution.
The resolution?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to vote aye, and I just also will note that as the proud parent of a senior in high school and a first grader in elementary school who regularly deals with these questions of safety in the immediate area around both of the public schools my children attend. This is very important work, and Mayor, the Parks Bureau has a big dog in this fight as well, because in many parts of our city, the safest route to school, in fact, is through a park or through another public space. So we'll be partnering with PBOT and the school district to make sure we get this right. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I can't help but think about last night at our public budget hearing at Wilson High School. We had several high school students there who attended and gave me their comment cards as they left, and I realized that one of the issues they were most eloquent on was the need for additional sidewalks to get to school safely. And I think this this is a good step. I mean, it's potentially $5 million if the bond measure passes, plus others. And I think this agreement sets the right framework for us to make sure that our children get to school safely. So I'm pleased to support this. Aye.
Leonard?
So I, too, will remark on this particular item, and that will apply as well to the vote we're going to take on S-215 as well. And maybe it's because I spent a number of years in the legislature working on funding issues for school that that I so much respect the opinion of school board members that run and get elected to some 199, I believe, separate school boards and school districts throughout the state of Oregon, none of whom are paid, all of whom get about the same level of grief that we do here, and but we get paid for it. So I find myself wanting to, if I have any doubt on a particular issue, certainly give the benefit of doubt to our school board members who came in and asked for this compromise that the mayor, as has been described so artfully, crafted. But I also would be remiss if I didn't say, and probably this comes from the 8-plus years that I've had the Bureau of Development Services assigned to me, I've seen people who are very wise in the the mechanics of the building code and the zoning code be able to use those codes not for their intended purpose but to achieve other ends. And I suspect that in this case that is exactly what's happened, that the Portland Public Schools working under daunting financial conditions caused by the passage of Measure 5 and certainly other economic factors such as the recent recession, near depression, have tried to figure out how to take a very fixed amount of dollars and spread them adequately to provide educational opportunities in schools throughout the city for kids. There are parents that don't like some of the decisions the schools have made for consolidation purposes and other purposes, and artfully figured out how to use portions of the planning and zoning code in an attempt to block a decision made by the school district to try to streamline their expenses. I object to that. I do not appreciate that. That's just the one person's opinion up here. I think that to the extent parents have issues with decisions school boards make, those decisions should be challenged at school board meetings, and if they're not satisfied, they're at the next election for school board members. But attempting to tie up the school district with concerns about decisions made by the school board in terms of consolidation is not, to me, the most effective use of our public resources, particularly at the Bureau of Development Services, where we're stretched thin as it is to spend the amount of time necessary to sort through this, has been distressing for me. So I not only vote yes, I also want to call out, as Commissioner Fish did, Sam's outstanding work at finding a middle ground that achieves what I think is a reasonable path towards safety, while also truly working with the school district to make sure the school district has the cooperation of this city government to meet the ends that they so diligently work towards to provide our kids the best opportunities possible. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank the Portland Public School District for engaging in this negotiations and for the first time that I'm aware of actually legally commit to help fund safe routes to schools. And part of the reason we took this tact is that the previous approach did not yield results, did not yield adequate results in terms of a shared and joint acceptance of a shared and joint responsibility for safe routes to schools. The transportation funding world is full of meager sources that require matches. And so this $5 million will serve as a cornerstone for other matches. I want to thank the good folks at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for your work on this. I think this is great. It's innovative. And I vote aye. Can you please call the vote for S-215?
Fritz?
I have some comments on this, which I need to make for the record because of the nature of the process that this conditional use refinement project was intended to address. The primary reason for this code refinement, as it was called, is because Portland Public Schools violated the zoning code by allowing major changes without following the required conditional use process. That was allowed by the Bureau of Development Services, and by this process, we are saying that we don't plan to take any action on those cases. Yes, there may be some ambiguity in the interpretation of the code, but this change isn't just about interpretation or clarification. This vote and this change is about allowing the violations to be forgiven and allowing the school districts to have almost total control in how they configure and mix grades in our public schools in our neighborhoods. The Planning Commission understood the negative ramifications of blending grades on the neighborhood as well as on the education of students, which may be positive or negative. The Planning Commission understood that adding traffic on streets that may not have sidewalks or crosswalks and adding different ages of children on those streets is something that the city should have some input in. I don't believe we've resolved the Planning Commission's concerns or the need for public discourse around these issues. Conditional use would have allowed those discussions, and a Type 3 conditional use would have allowed those discussions at the highest level with the City Council, and this process does not. Public involvement is a key component to the Portland political process. These amendments remove that component by not requiring conditional use reviews in most grade level and school size changes. While on the one hand, the Planning Commission wanted the city to form a more collaborative process, and some would say that the memorandum reflects this collaboration, the reduction of public process through the types of review envisioned reduces collaboration with the public on a case-by-case basis. I'm concerned about the issues of equity that were raised last week with regard to school boundary adjustments, consolidations, and closures. It seems apparent that these times of decision require a higher level of public process than only the school district. Decisions by the school districts affect services, equitable opportunity, and infrastructure in the city. I would like to see changes incorporated in the comprehensive plan through the Portland Plan process to reflect this reality. I'm concerned about what we're doing in regard to moving the regulatory goalposts and adhering to Oregon administrative rules. I advocated for the retention of the Type 3 review process to keep that public dialogue and the goalposts intact, to have a process which allows the community, the city, and the school district to have the dialogue around infrastructure needs for that particular school and not whether the decision to blend those grades is appropriate. I recognize I'm in the minority on that view and in the value of the conditional use process. No.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. S215 is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote? Second reading, item number 214.
Adopt fees for extreme economic hardship exemption applications under containers in the right-of-way rules. Fritz?
Again, I appreciate the conversation on this and the hard work of staff, and I understand the need for the fees related to a process of removal of containers from the right-of-way. I do not believe that the proposed fees are representative of the staff time that it takes to process all the actions and processes that will be erected to deal with these problems. However, obviously, if we're having a hardship exemption, we need to make sure that the fee initially is not an additional economic burden. I would like us to revisit these fees after we have put in place the administrative rules that are intended to prevent and prohibit placement of containers in the right-of-way. Potentially, expanding for extensions, the fee could include the actual cost of staff time to process or other administrative ways of very much discouraging or, in fact, prohibiting extensions. We need to provide regulatory mandates that prevent the waivers as becoming just part of the cost of doing business. My concern is that regardless of the fees imposed, in some cases we will see the same containers remaining based on what staff and possibly the hearings officer determines as an economic hardship. This is a process which has been going on for 9 years, and we need to get to a conclusion, which is why I'm supporting the fee. We also need to get to a conclusion of having dumpsters in the right-of-way. The administrative rules must provide a significant disincentive for allowing extensions, such as requiring that all such requests be made to council. I look forward to having that discussion in the coming months for staff sending the proposed administrative rules out for public review. And I appreciate very much Mayor Adam being willing to have those administrative rules come back to council so that we can once and for all get to a final resolution on this issue. Aye.
Fish.
Mayor, before I vote on this, I just want to acknowledge how great it is to have Carla back with us and just express our best wishes to her. And it's wonderful to have you back in the place where you belong. So we welcome you back. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, and since last week, I've had the chance to meet with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff to review the proposed administrative rules and the application for the hardship waiver. And I think both are pretty substantial hurdles, or the rules and the application pose some substantial hurdles to those who want to continue under the hardship exemption to keep a container in the right-of-way. And that's as it should be. It should be a hurdle, and I do look forward to the public review of those rules and coming back to council for our ultimate approval. But I do think we need to, you know, continue to focus on not allowing a hardship waiver just to become a cost of doing business. And I'm not convinced that's the case. I think the rules and application are good, but that's something I look forward to further discussions on. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
I appreciate the council consideration of this item. I think this is an example where perfect is the enemy of good, and perfect is the enemy of let's get something in place and improve it as we go. This moves us forward. We'll be coming back with the administrative rules. There's a reason that the city hasn't tackled this in its whatever 100 and how old are we? 153 years.
I'll let you do the math.
Is that
153?
It's
160. 149.
All I know is that we're older than the county.
160.
Older than the county. We're the second oldest city in the United States. No, in the Oregon. Let's just go on a brag.
Yeah,
brag here. You know,
second oldest city in the United States. That's good.
Yeah. Let's get started. And whatever we come up with, we will absolutely have to change and perfect and polish as we get going. But I am tired of this being stuck in a policy and political cul-de-sac. It's time to get something on the ground and learn what the best way to approach this is. Can you please read the title for 216? And unless there's objections, I'm referring it back to my office.
Authorize the Bureau of Transportation to acquire certain permanent and temporary rights necessary for construction of the Southwest Boones Ferry Road, Southwest Stevenson Road project through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
Unless there are objections, 216 is referred to the mayor, back to the mayor's office. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 217?
Authorize a letter of agreement with Laborers International Union of North America, Local 483.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. Patrick Ward, Labor Relations Coordinator with the Bureau of Human Resources. This ordinance will authorize a letter of agreement replacing a 1998 letter of agreement between the parties that established the Water Treatment Operators Relief Crew at the Bureau of Environmental Services Columbia Boulevard Water Treatment Plant. The 1998 letter of agreement was raised during negotiations between the cities and the city and the District Council of Trade Unions. At the time that the parties reached a tentative agreement, it was agreed that we would work on this letter of agreement and to improve it and address issues that occurred since the original letter was signed. The ordinance is the result of that. The Bureau of Human Resources recommends this ratification of this letter of agreement.
Discussions from council.
Is anyone from Labor's 483 here today?
I don't believe they are.
No. Anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carla, can you please call the vote on this matter?
Fritz?
Thank you to all involved in the negotiations, to Richard Beadle and the members of Local 483. Good work. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. That gets us to... Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance first reading, item number 218?
Authorized borrowing for computerized permit tracking system.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Thank you. We've got various city officials from various city bureaus coming forward. I will give the briefest of opening remarks to make sure that the council recalls the framework within which this ordinance arrived here. The status today of getting a permit in the city of Portland to construct something is stuck in the 50s. And as Ronnie Millsap used to sing, lost in the 50s.
You mean the 1850s, right?
Well, no, they actually do have a better system than back in the 1850s, but definitely 1950s era technology. So that to this day, we take paper plans and literally put them in a shopping cart and move them from desk to desk to desk. At the end of the process, they are at times microfiched and stored on microfiche. We have for, as the council recalls, over a period of, I don't know, Hank, has it been 2 years that we've been working on this project? Over a period of 2 years, started fresh by first not assuming any one product would be the best system for us to purchase and implement to computerize our permitting system, but rather I gave very explicit direction that the Bureau set out first, hopefully to find something off the shelf. Didn't want to have us go through processes that we've been through in this city before where we create our own unique permitting system. But if there was something that worked, identify who those manufacturers are. And two, as they kind of narrow down what they determine were the most viable products out there, to actually go to the cities where they're used, look at them, ride with the folks out in the cars, the building inspectors, sit with the plans examiners, see how it actually works. So the Bureau did that. And did that, I want to remind you, in an atmosphere that has been unprecedented at the Bureau of Development Services and certainly anywhere else in the city, where they've experienced, as the economy dropped, a mirror reflection of those economic indicators, particularly in the construction industry, commercial and residential, where our commercial permits virtually stopped being issued. In that atmosphere of laying off over half of the Bureau of Development Services, I'm not talking about eliminating vacant positions, but sitting Paul and I and his management team with three groups of 50 people and explaining to them why they had to lose their jobs. In that atmosphere, simultaneous with that, identifying and creating the basis for which we needed to finally make the step at the City of Portland to automate our permitting system. What you see before you today is the culmination of countless hours of effort and work that finally is manifest in this document. Some I might anticipate some questions about, well, Randy, this started out as a $5.2 or $5.3 million project, and now it's you're at $6.6 million. And I want to remind the council that as at each, if anything, I have defaulted to over briefings with the council on this subject. Not only as it's come up as appropriate on council agenda items, I've asked for and received, and you've all been given a council informal session on this topic. So what we tried to do is give you the current information at that point in time that we had, be forthright, transparent. But as this project has progressed, and you'll hear from Eric Johansson here in a moment, and OMF has weighed in, there have been some concerns that our contingency budget wasn't as large as it should be, that there were some other factors that they would feel more comfortable being built into this project, that we actually would need more staff than what we had anticipated to take all of that data that's currently in papers, in archives, on shelves, and digitize it. So we're actually going to be hiring more staff than we thought, bringing back more people, fortunately, who are laid off currently to help input the data needed to get the system up and running. The system we concluded on, and I'll just close with this, the system we concluded actually was the best system, happened to be, fortunately, the same system that the state of Oregon uses throughout the state, Excella. And our negotiations with Excella continue, but we have the benefit not only of having independently verified that, in fact, that is the best system out there, we have the opportunity now to tag on to the state system and truly become an integrated statewide system that works with other, not only the state of Oregon and its building codes division and its application of various codes, but also other jurisdictions. So if you are a frequent user of the Bureau of Development Services permits, it will be, if you can imagine, exceedingly refreshing to know that if you went to Hillsborough to get a permit, the same kind of processes you went through at Hillsborough or even the state of Oregon will be the same processes the city of Portland will have as well. So I would not have allowed this proposal to come at this time if I didn't think it was ripe and it was polished and it was ready. We are going to be giving you as much information as we can here in the presentation, and certainly are prepared to answer any questions any members of the council has. But I do urge the council to please listen carefully, and I would appreciate your support today in moving this project forward. Paul.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Paul Scarlett, Bureau of Development Services. As a matter of protocol, given that this ordinance is being brought forward by the City Treasurer's Office, I'll yield to Eric at this time and then do my part after. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Eric Johansson, City Treasurer. I'm going to give a brief overview of what this ordinance does and authorizes with respect to the system. As Commissioner Leonard said, this authorizes up to $6.6 million to pay the capitalizable costs and anticipated accrued interest related to the Bureau's acquisition of the permit tracking system. The form of the financing is expected to be a 5-year line of credit. According to BDS cash flow projections, the line of credit will be repaid over a period of 2 years beginning in fiscal 13-14. The source of repayment is expected to be Bureau revenues. In addition, the line will be secured by the full faith and credit and available general funds of the city. In the event that Bureau revenues were not sufficient to repay the line by the end of the fifth year, we have a number of options, including refinancing the line as well as applying other revenues, probably general fund revenues, to satisfy the obligation. Upon approval of the ordinance, debt management will issue a request for proposals to our list of commercial banks that provide lines of credit to us. We'd expect that the line will be in place and available to be drawn upon probably mid to late April. So that's the broad overview of the ordinance itself. Happy to take any questions at this point.
So if I could, Eric, sure. Two things. One, and I mean this lovingly. This is constructive criticism. But I know there's been a renewed effort to try to put things in the agenda that are more descriptive. And I think it'd be helpful if like on how we identify 218, if we describe what Bureau in a little more detail, because it to me it was a little opaque.
In terms of the source of repayment?
No, just in terms of how we put these items on our calendar. If I was a member of the public looking at 218, I'm not sure I would know unless I'm following closely what goes on here. So I know there's a trend, a movement to have more information for the public in our descriptors. Right. But to the substance, I have a couple questions. In the packet that I got, I went back and looked at a memo that you gave us in October of 2010, October 20th. And at that point, the figure that was being used was about $5.8 million. And in your memo to Paul, you said that the estimated cost of the project is approximately $5.8 million, of which all but $1.4 million are capitalized costs and therefore eligible for debt. In this proposal before us, it looks like it's $6.6 million line of credit, and if you back out the interest costs and the administration costs, 100% is capitalized costs. So what has changed?
The comparable number with respect to capitalized costs now is 5.8. So there is that difference. There are some additional costs that the Bureau can mention that are the non-capitalizable costs related to the project.
But as I understand, I'm just missing something obvious. But if the original figure, which is now gone up, included $1.4 million that was not capitalizable, how come the full amount of this proposal is?
I think the current non-capitalizable amount, I'm not sure I have that in my notes.
Denise, do you have it?
I'm just going off of your...
The current non-capitalizable amount is 1.4, which is a little higher, 1.47, which is slightly higher than the number that we relayed to you in November. And those costs are mostly in regards to our digitization project, the records conversion project that Commissioner Leonard has been talking about. The larger difference that is part of our presentation will show you that there are changes that we have been working on because of being able to more clearly define the project, understand what are the exact needs, and work a little more with the vendor. And so there's increased costs due to a better estimate of vendor costs, adding in a quality control, quality assurance piece to it, adding some very critical staff to assist with things like interface, two-way interface with SAP. So those costs are what is making
No, I get that, and I know we're gonna in your presentation get to why there's been an increase from 4.26 million to 5.84, and I don't want to jump the gun on that because that's certainly important. Maybe I'm just tripping up on language here. What did you mean when you said back in October that 1.4 million was non-capitalized cost?
What that meant is there of the total project costs, about 1.4 million is not eligible to be financed with tax exempt bonds, with the tax exempt financing. That number is still largely the same, a little bit higher, but is still in that $1.4 million range. So at that point in time, in October, we were talking somewhere in the range of 4.2 million in capitalizable costs. Now we're talking about 5.8 million in capitalizable costs. The non-capitalizable piece, the part that we have to pay from sources other than taxes and financing, is still around in that ballpark of 1.4 million.
Right, so that's the missing piece for me. So that number hasn't changed. We've just bumped up the capitalized portion by about 37%.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. That's all.
Thank you. Did you have something to?
Sure. My comments really echo what you said, Commissioner Leonard. The focus of our operation at BDS is really to provide the best level of service possible. And in doing so, we have researched and concluded that our technology system is outdated. And in order to provide the level of service that's concurrent with private operations, other jurisdictions are much smaller than our own, we have research and of course, concluded that Acceler can provide us that optimal solution in terms of improving access to our records, issuing permits for customers and employees to navigate the development review process. It's one that's paramount to our success We really feel that in order to improve BDS and meet its mission and goals, the ability to have off-site access to our operation, for example, about 30,000 people come through our doors each day, or each year, excuse me. That way of doing business hasn't changed much over the years. It was only about 10 years ago we now have a program that's very successful and the envy of a lot of other jurisdictions called the Facilities Permit Program, where one or a team of inspectors will work with developers and contractors to issue and review permits that doesn't require them to come into the building. Pretty much everything else is done the same. We know that having online access will improve our services. The ability to make these decisions is not done without ample research. Hank McDonald, the project manager for this project, has visited other jurisdictions, and we were pleased with what we heard and saw and are anxious to implement those changes. Working with the state of Oregon, that's already has been a very successful interaction. We anticipate a good result. Working with Excella, which is fine-tuning the contract and the cost to which Commissioner Fish is asking, those type of issues are still being worked out. We continue to monitor our operation on a daily basis relative to finances and efficiencies. Denise Klein, who's here with me, is the Bureau's Business Operations Manager, and Elshad Hajiv, who's instrumental in her finance and structure and worked well with OMF and Treasurer's Office. We monitor all revenues that come through the door on a daily basis. So we're tracking, and we have seen early signs, promising signs of the economy stabilizing and anticipate picking up here in the next month or two, to a point we're pretty confident based on the projections, and we've had a lot of expert review our projections. That's part of our financial plan that indicates we will be in a position to pay off this line of credit alone in the next 5 years, starting fiscal year 13-14 and hopefully concluding in fiscal year 14-15. So with that, we're...
Well, on that point, can I just, since you framed it, can I just, if you don't mind, go back to Eric and say, it's in your materials, but could you just remind us again, if within the next 5 years revenue projections are not met and Paul's best efforts are not able to pay this off, would you please walk us through again what the city's options are at that point?
I think the most likely options, and Paul's correct, we're going to want to monitor the revenues very closely. And before we get out to 14-15, or at the time that the line expires, we're going to want to just have a good expectation of whether or not we're going to be able to meet that schedule. If, in fact, the revenues, for whatever reason, aren't realized, the options that we have available to us are we could refinance the line of credit. So extend the term, essentially, until we can repay in full. Other options would be the general fund electing to step in or and funding, paying off the obligation in whole or in part. So there are a couple of primary options that we'd be looking at, but mostly, if we got to that point, I think we'd most likely be looking at doing some sort of a refinancing or restructuring of the line.
And, Eric, to the extent that the full faith and credit of the general fund is the backstop here. Do you maintain a running list of all of the debt service of the city that is secured in any way against the general fund?
We do. As does the city economist, so that we have an idea of what's sitting out there into the future.
So I know this is not an emergency ordinance, but would you kindly furnish that to me between now and the next hearing on this matter?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. How about all of us?
No, I meant
certainly.
Council.
Sure.
So if I could build on that excellent question, Commissioner Fish, relative to the economic projections. That's a good microeconomic analysis of the dynamic that would be important if the revenue projections didn't come in as BDS has determine them to be, but in the macroeconomic analysis, I think one needs to appreciate that there will be a whole lot more problems than BDS not being able to repay the loan for the computer if the construction industry doesn't do at least minimally, conservatively, what the Bureau of Development Services has projected they do. That is, start putting people back to work, start getting permits to build not just residential projects, but commercial projects is where we're hitting, getting hit hard. And so it's really important to understand that this is really just a very small kind of economic indicator of the larger national, maybe even international, if you will, economic phenomena that we find ourselves in now, which I would say, as the Bureau has said, we finally see some light at the end of the tunnel, and usually that kind of activity ends up building on itself and what is otherwise known as an economic recovery. So for us not to be able to repay the loan means the economic recovery that we're currently beginning to experience would tank. And we would have much larger problems than as a city and a state and a country than just BDS not being able to pay this loan as forecast.
And for additional security or confidence level, we have included if the economy does not recover at the anticipated projected rate and it's, say, 5% less, we still show that we're able to pay back the loan within the time period indicated. So, again, we're just very excited about this advantageous opportunity to improve our services through our technology. And I believe it will be to the benefit of the city, the Bureau, and all of our customers and employees. So very excited about it. You have a handout, which I was remiss in highlighting, that covers the sort of more specific cost estimates that questions been raised about and changes in the estimates, which is tied to the line of credit that's being requested. So with that, I'll turn it over to Hank to talk a little bit about where we're at with the project relative to progress, which is we're pretty excited about as well. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and Council. I'm very happy to be here today to kind of report where we're at right now, where we're going, and where we have been. The ITAP project update includes that we are continuing research and negotiation, as we have since November 2010, with Accela and the State of Oregon on scope of work, on contract for services, as well as intergovernmental agreement to become a full-service jurisdiction in the State of Oregon permitting system. We've taken our time with this. There's a lot of minds in the landscape here. We've been very diligent and very deliberate in all of the steps that we've taken. We've consulted a number of other jurisdictions, a number of other entities to try to identify as many of the challenges as possible and try to address as many of those challenges as possible. Earlier, Mayor Adams pointed out that, you know, we don't get it perfect to begin with, but we get it something as close as we can or something that we believe, you know, is acceptable, and then we continue to refine that. And that is exactly what we continue to do. I believe that we're at a point right now with the development of this initiative that we can honestly say that this is approximately how much it's going to cost, and we do have a very healthy and prudent contingency in this project. We are continuing to coordinate with the Bureau of Technology Services, who have partnered very well with us in all of the research and all the development of this strategy as we've moved forward, as well as with the Office of Management and Finance. We also have very accurate prioritization of the critical elements that will ensure, that are necessary, and we are working to ensure the necessary staffing. That's one of the reasons for the increase in expense. We have identified the criticality of the integration with the GIS system. We have added a GIS technician to this staff. We have identified the importance of a two-way link with the SAP system. We are bringing back on a part-time basis our change captain that helped us get to the SAP system as a Bureau. And so we feel that her efforts are going to ensure as much capability and functionality in that link as possible when we get to that. We are, like I said earlier, we are continuing to negotiate the statement of work with Accela. We're about halfway through that process. We are negotiating the contract for services with Accela. We're hoping to be done with that by late March, early April. It could extend well into April. There are some issues that we yet have to get to the bottom of. We're also continuing to negotiate the intergovernmental agreement with the State of Oregon to be a full-service jurisdiction, and we expect that also will be completed roughly the end of March and early April. I'm also very happy to report on the digitization portion of this initiative that very shortly we will have a functional tested digitization station where we will be capturing all of the paper that traditionally has gone out of the back end of this bureau to microfilm, microfiche, and we will start reducing that to a digital record that will be immediately retrievable by our staff and ultimately will be retrievable via web-based portal for all of our customers out in the city or wherever they may be. The issue of the non-capitalizable expenses came up earlier, and so what we're looking at there is we're looking at absorbing those costs in the line item of our budget that was microfilming or microfiching, and then we're spreading that project over a longer period of time. We're not going to be able to cover those costs in a two-year period with that line item. There's just no equity or equality there. So we're looking at potentially a 4 to 5 year project of digitizing all of these records to absorb that non-capitalizable expense. I hope that that kind of, you know, gets at that, but we're very, very close to being able to test and digitize all of our current records, and then we'll expand that capacity to include all of our historic records. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, where we're at today. Thank you for your time.
Discussion.
Thank you for all your good work on that. Commissioner Leonard, are we going to establish a subcommittee of the technology committee the oversight committee, like you did for PSSRP?
Absolutely.
With frontline users as well as citizens?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
I think, Paul, do you have anything to report on that?
Hank is currently working with this internal stakeholders group and is looking at expanding that to include, as we get a little further along. But
we're actually looking at creating probably 3 or 4 committees. I mean, we don't want to get too committee heavy here, but on the other hand, we do want to have a policy level committee that will be discussing directly with the Bureau of Directors and with you folks when we identify opportunities as we go down this path, lest we bypass opportunities because we just don't want to spend that additional money. We know those opportunities are out there. We don't know what they are yet. We also want to have a stakeholders group that are the everyday lower level. Well, I hate to. That's the wrong term to use.
Customer.
The people who work with this on a daily basis and manage how it is used on a daily basis, we want those people at the table. We don't want to just ask how we've done things. We want to ask how do we want to do things. But until we understand exactly how we have done things, it's very difficult to configure and script how we're going to do things. So that group is going to be the larger of the groups, and that's going to be our critical function group. They're going to be the ones that are going to say, absolutely, this is how we've done it, but this is how we want to do it. And then the final group is going to be a external stakeholders group that may include our development review and advisory committee, or the development review advisory committee may have their own subcommittee. We haven't gone to them in agenda yet to get a decision on that, but we believe that they have to be along, every step of the way. They have been fully briefed, but they're going to have to provide a subcommittee that's going to work more closely.
Thank you. I certainly appreciate it. I call them frontline users.
Thank you. That's a much better term than where I stumbled
frontline
into.
Frontline staff provider. No, it's good.
But
I'd also like to know how that fits in with the OMF Technology Committee that Commissioner...
Technology Oversight. I noticed, too, you also have an independent quality assurance.
We are negotiating with an independent quality assurance contractor. We're talking to the entity that was quality assurance for the state of Oregon. It's critical that whoever is along the way with us on this has a very fundamental understanding of exactly what the intention was for the statewide super agency model, and that's really something that we have to capture.
To answer your question, Commissioner Fritz, Ken Russ has talked to me about that committee and how this will be integrated into it, given that it's already started.
Wonderful. Thank
yes.
you.
Mayor, since Paul's here, can I just make one other comment? I met with the head of New Seasons the other day, and that was in connection with some programs that they are supporting or want to support with the Parks Bureau. And in the course of the discussion, I just asked, the usual what we do when we go out and visit with people is, what's your relationship like with the city and, how's your business? And she reminded me that when they built a store years ago on Interstate, there were many, many challenges. And I recall Randy's forehead is getting furrowed But I don't think I was on the council then, but I remember there were tremendous challenges. So I asked her what was her experience with the store they just opened in Hawthorne, which I think is their most recent store, and they're planning to open two stores a year now as part of their business plan. And she said that that they had an outstanding relationship with BDS, and in part because they had what she called concierge